It's Monday, October 12th, 2020. I'm Tanya Harris, and welcome to TMI Daily, your daily roundup of everything people are talking about online since they aren't allowed to talk about it in person. This morning, Amy Coney Barrett wore a mask for much of the first day of her Supreme Court confirmation hearings, which greatly helped in keeping voters from seeing her smile every time someone said that she was going to be the final vote to overturn a woman's right to choose. Yesterday, Trump announced on Twitter that he is now immune from the COVID virus and could not spread it, which isn't entirely inaccurate since everyone around him already has it. The New York Times reported on Saturday that Trump wanted to wear a Superman shirt when he left the hospital. Yes, that would have worked out great. Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's super spreader. It's being reported that California Republicans are setting up fake drop-off boxes to harvest ballots. So, Vladimir, if you have any fake votes for Trump, that's the place to drop them off. Dr. Anthony Fauci is frustrated that the Trump campaign used a March interview comment of his without his consent in an ad. As much as this may seem upsetting, it is a turning point for Trump, who usually only does things without consent to women. On Saturday, a couple hundred Black and Latinos were paid to stand outside the White House balcony and pretend to be supporting Trump while he gave a speech, proving that nothing goes better with false claims than false supporters cheering for them. Last night in Orlando, the Lakers defeated the Miami Heat to capture their 17th NBA championship. Great job, guys. Now, if you want a real challenge, try not getting COVID outside the bubble. Kirstie Alley tweeted that she didn't think 18-year-olds should vote because most have not yet held full-time jobs, paid rent, or raised a family. In typical fashion, 18-year-olds tried to cancel her for the statement, only to find out how hard it is to cancel someone whose career is already dead. The War with Grandpa was number one at the abysmal U.S. box office. I guess that with the likelihood that Trump is going to lose next month and no Thanksgiving, this might be the only chance for Americans to see a fight with a grandfather this year. Hailey Bieber has endorsed Joe Biden for president. This is an important get for Biden as Hailey proves that you can make the mistake of choosing a self-centered man-child with a history of unlawful behavior and still come back to your senses. Now let's send it over to tonight's TMI Daily cast and crew roundtable. Stay safe.
To us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or their podcast streaming service of their choice. Let's start with you, Pete.
It's Monday, which means that this weekend just ended. Okay.
Joe?
Hi, everyone. Happy Indigenous Peoples Day. The best way to celebrate? Going to Morongo Casino.
Elizabeth?
Also, happy Indigenous Peoples Day, but a better way to celebrate is to donate to an organization like Coalition to Stop Violence Against Native Women. They face a murder rate 10 times higher than the national average for a variety of reasons, and no one is really stopping it. So donate. Donate those winnings from Morongo to that organization.
That's right.
Thank you for that, Elizabeth. And Emma.
I have nothing so profound. The Yankees lost this weekend, which means that half of my personality is gone now until the spring.
Okay.
The other half is still with us, though?
Yeah, sorry.
Cool. Is that the half that likes a curse?
Because it's
not going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere, is it?
Okay, so later on in the show, we're going to be joined by Aaron King, and he hosts a podcast called Behind the Reel. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Okay, so let's get started with today's show. With another weekend full of news, let's start tonight with Just One Question, where we take some of the top stories and I ask just one question. Today began the Senate's confirmation hearing of Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett, with Republicans touting her credentials and claiming that Democrats were going to use religious bias to attack her, and Democrats using most of their time to claim that Barrett was going to be the deciding vote to overturn Roe versus Wade and eliminate Obamacare. My question is, Is either side going to Is either side going to come out ahead politically when this is all said and done? That's my question. Who wants to start? Pete, let's start with you.
Well, I mean, it's going to probably help both bases for a little while, but if you watched any of the hearing this morning, it was really clear that both sides had their message. The Republicans' message basically was that liberals hate Christians and that they'll do anything to show religious bigotry and use that as an excuse. And on the other side, the Democrats were saying ACA, Roe versus Wade. They were basically hitting them. I mean, they had pictures of all these people that I guess had some kind of pre-existing condition, you know, behind them so that they could say, this woman is going to take away your Obamacare if, you know, she's going to take away any possibility of you getting insurance because, you know, obviously the pre-existing condition part of the ACA. So I think that both sides are going to use that to their advantage. But I think when you have 30 million people or so that are getting healthcare through the ACA, and you have a lot of women who are not big fans of especially men telling them what to do with their bodies, I really think that the Democrats are probably going to have a little bit of an edge in this place. Plus, I also think if the Republicans get this through before the election, why did Republicans have to even come out and vote? I mean, I think this is actually going to depress some of their votes.
Okay. Anybody else? Emma.
I don't know if I'm being a little bit pessimistic with this. I feel like in the short term, like I definitely hear Peter's logic and I see that. But I think that as we get past this election cycle, voters tend to have fairly short attention spans. And we'll move on. Like, how often have you thought about Brett Kavanaugh, like outside of this, over the past few months? If we're looking like at a year or two from now, assuming she gets confirmed and it all goes through, she'll still be there. They'll still have that majority, and they'll get to keep moving with that for a long time. So, I mean, if we're looking at the short term, I probably agree that Democrats might come out better. But long-term, it does concern me because these are lifetime appointments for better or for worse.
Short-term, all that matters until after November 3rd. I mean,
no.
Right now, I think that until we get to November 3rd, there's nothing other than that, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of tricks you can play and maneuvers you can make after you have control of both houses of government and the White House that could kind of nullify the fact that there's a 6-3 majority on the Supreme Court. So, I mean, to me, you got to look at the short game before without even considering the long game. Because the long game, you know, right now, if things stay the same, liberals are fucked for several generations, especially younger liberals. But yeah, I mean, you can kind of like fix that if you vote and we get rid of anybody that's opposing the things that we care about.
Emma, do you want to respond to that?
I do. I don't think that caring about the long term is exclusive of caring about the short term. I think also that, listen, this is kind of set in stone. They have the votes. She's going to get confirmed. Like, it's happening. And so it's more about the messaging now and like how you play that in the short term and also long term. So listen, I'm not saying like we're screwed because she's going to get confirmed and that's just kind of it. And so we give up on the short term. But if we're looking at like this one move, like in its own little bubble, I think it does like long-term come out better for conservatives.
Okay, Elizabeth?
Yeah, because they're, you know, I know you've explained before like how you could circumvent like an ACA repeal. I don't know how you could circumvent a Roe v. Wade appeal because then it goes back to the states and it's like, well, if you're in a state that's cool with it, great, but if you're not, you're screwed. Though, you know, but that's assuming that works out in the long term to Democrats' benefit, that they win those seats and those elections and things like that. And that's, I think, still should be a huge concern because we just, there's so many toss ups and so many, like, you know, uncertain. I mean, it's always uncertain, but you know what I mean? Like, just uncertain outcomes. I mean, is this one of our questions about the ballot box thing here in California where they're putting out the fake ballot boxes?
No, but it's a
like they're trying to steal the fucking election, like just straight up do it. And they were sent a cease and desist today, the California GOP, and they said, well, we're just going to ignore that. Like, they're just doing this insane shit. And as much as like I want to hope that we still outvote them with huge turnout and things like that, it's really scary.
No, I mean, look, you know what? This is a really like treacherous time in a sense, because there are a lot of reasons to believe that there's going to be a lot of things done that we've never seen before. But the honest truth is there really isn't going to be things that have never been seen before, because Republicans for generations have relied on suppression, you know. Mm-hmm. So fake ballot boxes, I'm sure nobody just thought of this for the first time last weekend and said, hey, let's do it now. I mean, I'm sure this has been happening. It's just that we're more hyper aware of it now because of everything that Trump's been putting out there to try and to press the vote. But in reality, I mean, again, you know, I don't want to go into a whole rant about why he can't do more than what he claims he's going to do. But the reality of it is, unless you have a state where all three branches of government are in one party, it's not going to happen. It's just because as long as you either have a governor, an attorney general, a secretary of state or the legislature, as an opposing party, it can't happen because all three have to be in agreement before something leaves the state. And that's why, I mean, I think there's not many states that can happen in. And yeah, maybe Florida would be one that it could happen in, but I think Iowa, but Iowa shouldn't even be available to Democrats right now. Same thing with Georgia, shouldn't even be available to Democrats. So it's really not as likely as people want to think it is.
I hope so.
I hope so too.
Okay. All right. So on Saturday, Trump held his first public appearance with several hundreds of people cheering him on from the White House balcony. Since then, it was reported that most of the black and brown faces in the audience had been paid to be there. My question is there any scenario in which Trump is able to cobble together any meaningful support from people of color, or has that ship sailed? Elizabeth, let's start with you.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I have a question. I don't know if anyone has the answer because I haven't been able to read up on it. So obviously, we know holding the rally at the White House is like a violation of the Hatch Act or whatever.
Hatch.
Thank you. The Hatch Act. But part of me was like, is this like some weird loophole where you have to pay people to come? Like,
No, it was, what it was.
Just straight up illegal all around, okay?
Yeah, Candace Owen, who's shooting to be the black voice on Fox for the next 4 years. You know, she wants to be the Stacey Dash for the next 4 years.
Yeah.
There will be at least one black person in one of the two higher offices if Biden wins. Mm-hmm. So she's shooting for that job. So she started this fake
Blexit.
And she was trying to do an event somewhere else, and then the White House asked her to come and bring people to there because of the fact that they couldn't actually assume that people from Washington D.C. were going to show up at the White House to cheer for Trump. So what they did was they paid a group of people to come into Washington, D.C. They stayed at a hotel. Their travel was paid for. They stuck them with the shirts and they stuck them on, on the
White House. Okay.
And then the best part is he basically spoke to white suburbanites about being afraid.
These people are coming for you.
Ridiculous.
I guess, free trip to DC, get some cash. I mean,
I wonder how much they paid them.
Is it probably like super, like minimum, like $150 a day?
Is it
copy and credit?
Is it more than Saturday Night Live paid for their audience? I think that's Philip a really good question.
Philip wants to know if they sold a paid audience the idea from SNL.
I mean, that's one way to guarantee you have people.
Here's a new career, people.
This isn't the first time that the Trump campaign has paid for people to be in the audience.
Yeah.
They do this fairly regularly. And as funny as that is, it is not entirely uncommon, because you want to like know that you're going to have sane people behind the candidate when the cameras are on them.
Right.
So, as much as it's a funny idea, like it's not unheard of. Like, it's not just the Republic. But I think two things. One is in order to get people of color to be buried behind him, I imagine the rate has to go up. I have no evidence for this. I just feel like, listen, if you're going to sell out everything.
It's your feelings, you know it to be true.
So hard. It's pure truthiness. I know it in my gut, but I know it in my gut. And then the other thing, in terms of like rounding up meaningful support from people of color, I think there's a few select demographics that fall within people of color that he could maybe get. But in terms of like all people of color, he would have to get real cool about a whole lot of stuff very fast.
And possibly stop having the ghost of Herman Cain tweet. Might be a good way to start.
Rumor has it that the Trump campaign also tried to get Amish there, but they couldn't get anyone on the phone.
Oh.
But I mean, there was
Amish for Trump
this weekend that actually kind of showed, again, they're polls, but they kind of showed that fear that Biden had earlier about his slippage of support with Latinos had actually kind of shored itself up, and that he's now, I think they said something like Trump is getting something like 13 or 14% of the Latino vote, and it's in like 8 or 9% of the Black vote, if you average it out. So, you know, I mean, will he get some people? Of course he will, but will it be of any meaningful value? No, not really. And especially the states where they need to win right now. I mean, you can't imagine that Black voters in Wisconsin or Michigan or Pennsylvania are going to vote for Trump.
Well,
or
Minnesota. No, he's abandoning advertisement in a lot of these places.
Yeah, like he's
pulled out of Nevada and Ohio and Michigan and a couple of these other ones. And
Iowa.
He's concentrating on ones that normally he shouldn't be concentrating on. Yeah, Florida, North Carolina, like that.
Yeah,
so, and he still only has half the money that the Biden campaign has. So,
yeah, no, it's you know, they don't have as much money as they thought they were going to have, because firstly, their former campaign manager Brad Parscale apparently might have taken like $40 million, which is great, and I'm sure Trump can't even get mad because he would have done it if he thought of it first.
Sure,
I'm not mad. I'm just proud.
Yeah, it's like he does get the best people, but yeah, no, they're spending all their money now and supposedly in the Sun Belt in like Arizona and Florida and Nevada, but yeah, they're not,
they pulled out of Nevada.
They're
hitting North Carolina. North Carolina, come on.
Apparently, so today I was watching them. They had somebody on talking about it before, but yeah, it's again, if you got to buy, like Biden bought ads in Texas this week. If you're buying ads in Texas, that means that Trump's not doing as well as he'd like, because it used to be that the only way you'd see any, you know, like a Democrat on the air in Texas is when they're getting shot at by somebody in Texas.
Go
that's
for
where,
it, Texas.
That's where they wanted.
Go get your vote out to your one ballot box. Go now.
That's where I did.
Because it'll take you 3 days to get there.
I did phone banking in Texas a couple weeks ago. That was one like on the list of like places to sign up. They were like, we really need Texas right now. So I sat on the phone for a couple hours.
How did that roll, Elizabeth, talking to people in Texas?
It went pretty well. You know, as with any like random person calling, which is what I was, you get a few weird people or just hangups. That's
right.
I also have previous phone calling experience through fundraising at my college as like an alum, calling up alumni and asking them for money and doing phone surveys for the Nielsen ratings company. I did that for like 9 months, almost a year when I first moved here. So I'm insanely good at talking to people on the phone, as it turns out. I was like the number one survey getter at Nielsen. I earned enough points through their corporate reward system to get a free flat screen TV and a Wii. That's how goddamn good I was.
You're good.
Wow.
And I had a pretty great time on the phone with the good people of Texas. And my only regret, I think we talked about it off mic, is there were definitely a handful of people who answered the phone in Spanish. And unfortunately, I don't speak any Spanish. Mm-hmm. But we were supposed to say, someone will call you back who speaks Spanish. But I was not given the Spanish translation of that to tell the Spanish speaker. So it's just me going, gracias. Oh, we did talk about this before. Sorry. I guess I remember saying that before. But I highly encourage them to, like, could you give me the translation? Or I guess I should figure it out myself. But
oh, you could just ask me and I'll give it to you.
Congratulations.
Yeah, actually, I should just
congratulations, Elizabeth. You did such a good job in Texas. Your brisket's in the mail.
Yay! I love a good brisket.
Okay, so Kirstie Alley took some heat this weekend for tweeting that 18-year-olds shouldn't be able to vote because they don't have full-time jobs, pay rent, or have a family to raise. At the same time, a study came out over the weekend that said that 18 to 25-year-olds make up 10% of the potential voting population this year, but only about 4% of them is likely to vote at all. My question is, considering how few young people come out to vote, but how many of them are so vocal in the political process, would it be the worst thing in the world to move the voting age back to 21? Elizabeth.
Only if you move the draft age back, or the age of eligibility to sign up for the Army. You send an 18-year-old into the Army or the military and expect that to be okay, but not to vote? Nah, no dice.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Emma.
If the rationale is that 18-year-olds don't have like rents or jobs or families, not a ton of 21-year-olds do either.
Yeah.
I think it's a weird rationale. I think there are plenty of people who are like upwards in their 20s or even 30s who don't have families, or, you know, still live with their parents and don't pay rent, you know, who are more family based. That's a interesting way to decide who should and shouldn't get to vote. And I fully understand that I'm as liberal as they come on this. Like, I think that 16-year-olds should be able to vote. Why are we restricting it only at 18? It should go down, not up. But the idea that you should only be able to vote if you have a family or if you've got a specific kind of job, it takes me back to times when like only property owners could vote, and that was not superb. I don't want to go in that direction.
Yeah, to me, like, I describe that like as an asshole tweet. You know, like, mm-hmm. it was really uncalled for. Like, there was
this cranky old lady bullshit. Is what
yeah,
it is.
Mm-hmm. And she's known to do stuff like this too for attention. I think that's what it was mostly. You know, to get some traction or whatever. Joe, and then I'll go to Pete.
I was like, it doesn't really matter what anyone feels about this anyway, because like those numbers said, young people don't go out and vote. I don't care how vocal they are. If they don't go out and vote, what's the point? And they don't go out and vote. They haven't gone out and vote back when I was young. And I was one of the few that did. So, I mean, and that was a long time ago. I mean, that was a really long time ago. That's when we actually had to like click the little switch. I mean, you know, but geez, they don't vote. So I think that's the bigger question. How do you, let's figure out a way to get young people to vote. And then we'll discuss what the age should be. Because right now they're not going to the polls.
Yeah, I agree. Pete?
Well, firstly, I do want to say that Kirstie Alley is a gigantic asshole. And all you have to do is look at her Twitter to see how big an asshole. I mean, you didn't need to read her Twitter to know that she was probably a big asshole, but that's beside the point. I think 18-year-olds should be able to vote. I just think that we should listen less to their opinions. Only for the simple reason that, again, if it was up to 18 to 21-year-olds right now, Bernie Sanders would be the nominee. None of them would come out and vote. And Trump would be the president again for the next 4 years. And I think that the problem that we have is not with us. I think it's more with the media who are buying into the idea that the that 18-year-olds should actually be asked anything and have what they say be worth any value to anybody. I mean, if it's only 10% of the vote, and out of that 10%, only 4% of them are going to actually vote, it's just they're not worth it. It's and that's the problem. And until they show that they're worth it, they really should not have that much of a say in the process. You know, I mean, I don't mean to sound like the get off my lawn old man, but at the same time, it's like we went through months and months of people screaming and hollering about who the nominee was going to be. It was never Joe Biden. It was always going to be either Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. And you know, I don't mean to be one of those people that says I told you so, but I was saying a year ago that neither one of them was going to be the nominee. That it was going to be Biden. And the reason why he was going to be the nominee was because, firstly, actual Democrats knew that they could not make Bernie Sanders the nominee because Trump would have such an easy target for him. But number two, the people that supported him would be busier playing Fortnite that day than actually coming out to vote. And every one of the primaries, they proved it. The only ones that he did better in were the caucuses, where you physically had to go there, because if you were in the room, I guess you could play with your phone the whole time, and then you might, you know, like pick the Bernie Sanders side. But when it came to actually getting up, going someplace and voting for someone, they weren't going to do it. And you know, I saw the stupidest statistic. One of the reasons why people under the age of 25 are saying that they probably won't vote is because they don't know how to put something in the mail, because they've never had to do it. But that was actually one of the reasons. Now, if you're going to tell me if that person should be helping decide the election, I'm going to tell you, you know what? I guess it's possible, because I saw the same people that were rooting on Trump today in Florida. If those people have a vote, I guess anybody should.
Emma?
A couple things. One is, if you don't want to listen to the opinions of 18-year-olds, all you have to do is not listen to the opinions of 18-year-olds. You can change the channel. You have that ability. Secondly, if 18-year-olds don't know how to put something in the mail, I'd argue that's more of a failure of the parents in the educational system, because why would they mail something? Why would they have learned that if someone doesn't teach them? Voting should actually be easier, but that's a whole other thing. And then the final thing I wanted to say is going to jump off of a point that Joe made, actually, which is I think we should look at it the other way around. It is more we look at lowering the voting age and then how to get them to vote. Because if you lower the voting age, then you can bring that into high school. Civics classes don't have to just be theoretical. They can be, okay, let's break down your ballot. Here's how you vote. These are like the people in our local elections. Here's what they stand for. Here's why you should care. If you make it 16 and then you talk about how to get them to the polls, it's much easier to make it relevant to them, to make them want to do it.
Elizabeth?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's a failure of the parental generation of the young voter that they don't know how to put something in the mail. Because, I mean, in all honesty, it's a technology, so to speak, that is not relevant to their day-to-day life. People don't mail that much. I mean, people mail a lot of things, but, like, how much do you mail? So, like, no one here is mailing stuff day in, day out. It's not the same, so... It's like when people are like, I can't believe a kid doesn't know how to use a rotary phone. Why the hell would they need to? It's an irrelevant technology. Not that the mail, not the post office is irrelevant, but like, you got to kind of think like that, come at it at a different angle. The question is not, as we said, like, why should we listen to them, but how do we get them involved? And I think part of it is we all say, oh, they're stupid and young. They don't know anything. I don't want to hear what they have to say. And I think that discourages a lot of younger voters to constantly be like, why should we listen to them? Who cares? They're too young. They're too stupid. They don't know anything. And so you kind of, not you in particular, but the generational divide kind of crushes some of that spirit a little, that like, maybe they would get involved, but then they're constantly being told they're not worth being involved with. So why would you participate?
But at the same time, I mean, And maybe I'm just being crazy, but you don't even have to put a fucking stamp on a ballot to mail it back in. You have to slide it into a slot. If somebody tells me they don't have that
common knowledge. My brother did phone banking, and he talked to an old lady who was struggling to figure out how to make sure she was registered and where to do that.
That's what I get. Yeah, but this is
not teaching anyone.
This is people that are just saying, I don't know how to mail something. It's not
why
a question.
Would
of,
they?
Why would they? Though?
Because
how often would an 18-year-old need to mail something?
It's putting something in a slot.
It's not that it's a physically complicated task. I understand that. But all your college applications now are online. Every classroom thing you do is online. You do not mail to pen pals anymore. You email with them or you talk to them on social media. That, like I said, technology basically is gone to them. They don't consider it a useful tool. And so if they're not taught how the tool works in the first place, they're never going to use it.
I guess I don't understand it either. And maybe because I'm older too, but I'm like, how hard is it to put a stamp and find out where, you know, your local mailbox is, or put it outside where your mail comes? I mean, again, I'm playing devil's advocate here. I
understand, but if you're never taught that, it's like, yes, could you Google it? Yeah, but in some ways, what incentive do you have to Google it? Yeah. Like, because you're told you're stupid and you don't know what you're doing. That's the whole thing. So you're just like, well, fuck it. What's the point of me participating? No one wants to hear what I have to say anyway. So I'm not going to mail this ballot.
It just amazes
me. Even though I Googled how to do it.
We're in a place where, in theory, what happens in November is going to affect the youngest people the most out of anybody, because over a long term, like I think it was Emma, were you the one who said it, that somebody else said it on TV earlier, but I was thinking of you, Emma, I don't know why. They said younger people are affected by like the Supreme Court nominee and by this election over a longer period of time than anybody else. And it's just like, I get it. I understand that, you know, they weren't taught this. And yes, I get it. Sometimes it might be like, well, why Google it? But do you see the shit that people spend more than enough time trying to learn how to do, whether it be being an influencer on TikTok or just any other
being shit? Being an influencer gets you money. Voting doesn't. Why would you do one and not the other? Like,
you know what? If you can figure out TikTok, though, that you can, and all the filters and all that stuff, yeah. You can figure out how to put a stamp on something. And
but you don't even have to.
I know you're. The guys are hung up on the physical act of putting a stamp on. That's not the issue.
That's how my brain works. Like, I have to.
It's not that their hands are 18 and don't know how to operate stamps because they're 18. That's not the actual issue.
Joe has been waiting. Oh, go ahead.
I've been very patient. Yeah, sorry.
I promise I'll make this super short, Joe. I feel like it's the same argument for, like, why don't people know how to use quills? All you have to do is sharpen the tip and dip it in ink and write. But, like, a lot of people don't know, like, how do you sharpen it? What angle do you use? Are you supposed to put a little slot in the middle? Like, there's nuances to even simple tasks, and if you are not taught them, then how do you know?
Mm-hmm. Joe?
Hey, I just wanted to say something personally to Kirstie Alley. I hope she's listening. Kirstie, Savick would let 16-year-olds vote.
Okay, and with that being said,
are we moving on?
I knew only one person would get that, but that's okay. You people, everybody who's in their car right now who got that, you're welcome.
So oh, no, that's okay. But yeah, the analogy of the pen and the quill and the ink thing, it's not, as I've said 100 times, it's just, there's a tweet that was going around where someone's cousin got their first apartment. And they kept complaining that they had to clean the oven. And they said, yeah, because they're putting the meat right on the grill. Their parent didn't teach them how to operate an oven. That person is not perhaps inherently stupid. Maybe they are. We don't know. But it's the idea that things have been done for them for so long by parents.
And that is a fault. It's the parents' fault.
They have no skills. And this whole younger generation, their parents have steamrolled every fucking problem that could ever arise for them. Mm-hmm. And so they in a lot of ways, a lot of them don't have a ton of life skills because they've been told they don't need to. Someone else will take care of it for
but
them.
But that guy should at one point be like, well, you know, I'm if doing I put something a tray wrong. Under this,
okay, guys,
it would be so much better.
Like, waiting to come on, and then we might pick this up later. I guess I just don't understand it because I just couldn't wait to vote when I turned 18, but that's just me. Okay, let's get our guest today. Aaron King is an LA-based actor and writer who hosts a podcast called Behind the Reel, in which he invites guests to talk about the journey people go through to be successful at their craft or career. Let's welcome Aaron King. And I think we have him with us. Hi, Aaron.
Hello.
Okay?
Hey, Aaron.
Hi, Aaron.
Hi.
Hi, how are you doing today? Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Pretty good. I'm doing really well. How about yourself?
We're doing well. Thank you. So first, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Like, I know you're an actor and a writer, but what made you decide to create this podcast?
Well, right now we're living in trying times. I mean, we're in the pandemic era, and it's crazy right now, as we can all realize by looking at our TV screens right now currently. What sparked the idea was something that I had thought about over about a year ago now. And I said to myself, I've been blessed to have met a lot of people over the series of years when it comes to business, the arts, education, et cetera. And tomorrow's not promised. And I said to myself, it would be great if I had my own podcast show where I can talk to everyone who was successful in their crafts and careers. Because we need, that little support, that little help, that little boost of motivation in order to stay encouraged in anything that we're doing. I said to myself, it'll be great if I interview teachers, actors, entrepreneurs, just so someone else that is struggling or that may have the same passion can hear from somebody else that's doing it currently successfully.
So based on what you just said, you know, you do get to interview people from different fields. Can you share with us some of the life lessons you've learned from some of your guests?
I've learned that it's not easy, and which is, you know, something that I find really good, because if it's not easy, then you're not, you know, not saying you're not learning from it, but it's more appreciated, your accomplishment. So I've learned that no matter where you are, as far as your environment, as far as where you live, no matter what your, you know, current age status is, if you have a dream and you want to pursue it with all the action in the world, you can achieve it. You can make it possible. So your dreams can become a reality just based off of your motivation. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing that I've learned.
Okay. So like you said, you know, you've talked to so many people, you talk about people's struggles and what they do to succeed. What do you personally think is one of the main things that keeps people from success, in your opinion?
That's a good question. I would say their own fear of self. Maybe they're unhappy with who they are on the inside. Mm-hmm. It's their own discouragement, mainly, that causes self-doubt. That's one of the main things I've found recently, as far as their own discouragement, as far as accomplishing whatever they would like to achieve, and procrastination. Some people are big procrastinators because they want people to believe in them, and not saying that they don't have a good inner circle that believe in them, but they just probably don't have that self-motivation that they need in order to pursue whatever it is they're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, before I open it up to the panel, where can people listen to your podcast?
You could listen to my podcast on Anchor, Spotify, Castbox, and different other podcasting platforms. And please keep me in your prayers, because I do want to go to iHeart pretty soon. So that could be in the works.
Sounds good. So does anybody have any questions or comments or anything for Aaron? Let's start with you, Emma.
I'm curious, what criteria do you use to determine whether a potential guest is successful?
Well, I usually will talk to them beforehand. And if you are any profession, could be a teacher, a working electrician, you're successful. I'm not talking about someone who's famous, someone who may have a lot of money, but if you are achieving to make sure that you are taking care of the utilities, your household bills, to me, you've made it. And not a lot of people appreciate that, but I want you to know, on my show, I appreciate that I am going to, you know, talk about your life journey if you want me to, because I think that's something that should be talked about. This the regular Joe, someone who is really just managing to take care of themselves and their family, not necessarily someone that's a celebrity or someone that is trying to be famous, but someone who is making it based off of just being a regular individual working hard in what they're doing.
Anybody else? Joe.
Aaron, what's the strangest story you've heard so far? Like, what's the strangest one you've had on your podcast?
The strangest story that I've had on my podcast thus far. That's a good question. The strangest thing. Oh, my goodness. What can I say? The strangest. I have to get back to you on that. I can't answer that fully.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Elizabeth.
Has any advice like really stuck with you? Like, I know you probably take a lot of the advice or like guidance from people's journey in, but has anything like really profoundly like changed how you go about doing things?
It really helped as far as within my own self motivation to continue to do what I'm doing. Some of the advice that I've heard from the different variety of recent guests that really moved me was, doesn't matter if you say you are quitting on whatever it is you're trying to do, if it's meant for you, it's meant for you. So the whole purpose of the show is for motivation for you to accomplish anything that you want to pursue. But someone recently said that, hey, if you quit, hey, if it's meant to you, meant for you, it will come naturally. So continue to do what you're doing, to make yourself whole, and be happy within anything that you're doing. But if it's meant for you, it will come naturally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Pete.
Thank you, by the way, for joining us today, Aaron.
You're welcome.
I want to ask, you know, when you're doing the type of show that you're doing, or, you know, even like with us, when we're doing our show, there's always a concern that you're putting out information that maybe you're not 1,000% sure about sometimes. I don't, because we talk a lot of politics, and so often, you know, I'll say something that I have to go check 1,000 times to make sure that I didn't say something that was incorrect. Mm-hmm. Do you ever have that issue where you kind of feel like you got to make sure that if you're giving out advice, that you're giving out advice that's backed up in some way with more than just your own common sense, but with, you know, through studies or through enough people that have said this is the way this is done. You know, I'm just curious to see how you kind of go about your process of kind of checking yourself when you're putting on your show.
Great question. Google is your best friend.
Yeah. It is.
So I want to make sure that everything is accurate. I always tell all my guest speakers to send their bio, and I review it along with my team. And I want to make sure that everything is authentic as possible. So I review it, whether it's Google, or I have my my bookshelf over here where I can look at my thesaurus. Or you see the great pumpkin.
Saw a pumpkin. That was about it.
but I have a lot of books that I research as well to make sure that everything's accurate.
Have you ever had like the occasion where somebody said something to you and you were and you were completely thrown by it because you had a completely different viewpoint and you realized right away, like, wow, maybe they just know more about this than I do? Or is that something like what somebody asked her before? Has anybody changed your mind on anything while you were talking to them?
Absolutely. I met this one individual recently who has his own company, his own business company. And he's also an author, and he was talking about how he came from Texas and he wanted to move everything that he had over at Texas over to Inglewood, California. And right now, currently, Inglewood is booming. So everything that he's doing as far as trying to create virtual jobs for everyone, that's something that I did not foresee coming in the future. But since we're living in this whole pandemic era, it's something that can be very lucrative.
Actually,
that's something that changed my mind.
Yeah, I have another question in case anybody did. Somebody want to go first? But okay, well, I'll ask. You know, you're an actor, and everybody involved with our show is either an actor or a writer, and most people involved in the field have to do something else in order to sustain themselves while they're trying to be the thing that they want to be. How, you know, what kind of advice can you give to people who are in a job that they're not doing with the idea that this is going to be my career? But, you know, obviously you don't want to be, you know, doing this in a half-assed kind of way. What kind of advice can you give to somebody who you know is not planning on being somewhere forever, but has to do a good enough job to stay where they are?
Look at it as a sacrifice. We all have to work 9 to 5s or graveyard. I work graveyard. I do security on the side at USC. And I work graveyard so I can have myself open to auditions or different gigs throughout the day. I would definitely ask and find out, per se, for them, you know, whatever, you know, schedule you can create, let it work for you. Continue to study your craft when it comes to going to classes. Well, currently we can't go to classes right now, but do some research if you can, read some novels, meet up with other actors that are in the field and try to help each other. Continue to have a goal and to have a journal, especially, and write in that journal And let that be a little bit of motivation to keep you focused on where you want to be in a year or in 2 years. It's right around the corner, your big break. We don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, but continue to stay focused and persistent. Persistency is key, is what I always tell everybody.
Okay. Anybody else? Well, Aaron, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciated having you on today.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Wait, Aaron, you're young. Do you know how to mail things? Can you put a stamp on an envelope?
Yes, I can.
You know how to mail things?
Oh, yeah. All right.
I told you.
It's no excuse. Double checking. You should be able to know how to mail things.
He knows. He's young.
I know. Everything is email now. Matter of fact, I have to mail.
Thank you, Aaron.
Wait. He's getting mail. He's getting mail.
I have a letter right here. As you can see, it's an empty envelope. And I have to put a card in here. So I'm
you
definitely
feel capable.
Something
they, wow.
That
people can do this.
Yes.
No,
yes.
Not
people
that hard.
Can do this.
No, because we're talking about how younger people say that they may not vote because of the fact that they don't know how to mail something. And I think there's no excuse for that.
Well, I think they're closing post office locations and making it harder to do.
I think everybody needs to sell their American greeting stock right now.
I'm trying to defend the young people. So I'm glad you know how to mail things, Aaron.
I'm glad too. Hey, I was raised old school.
Yeah. You were raised right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again, Aaron, and come on with us anytime. So
definitely. Thank you. And also, by the way, I looked at your cast and I happen to know a lot of people, Body Jean, Jadero.
Oh, okay.
A couple of people that as a part of the cast as far as the sketches for the TMI Hollywood.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
That's awesome.
It's a small world.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Great. Well, thanks again, Aaron. Well, hopefully we'll have you back sometime soon.
Yeah, definitely. Come on back, Aaron.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Have a great night.
You too.
Have a good night.
Right. Bye-bye.
So the New York Times reported that Trump's advisors had to talk him out of wearing a Superman shirt under his button-down shirt and ripping open the shirt right after taking off his mask on the White House balcony last week.
When he can't even get through it without laughing.
I know, I can't. I'm trying to do this with a straight face. My question is, did any of his advisors see the comedic value talking him out of this has deprived all of us? I think that probably would have like killed Peter.
I'd be dead.
You heard his response to the fly, but yeah. This, I mean, if I was to hear this about any other president, I'd say, oh, that's not true. But yeah. Does this really surprise us? No, of course not. Elizabeth.
I almost wonder if he got in some way, because everyone was joking he was going to pull the Wonka from Willy Wonka the Chocolate Factory, where Gene Wilder does that front flip somersault thing, it pops up after walking with the cane. And I wonder if he was like on Twitter in the hospital bed, like, oh, hell yeah, I'm gonna do it better though. I'm gonna wear the t-shirt and be like Clark Kent, nah. And like, that's not even someone's like, you can't even be like, oh, grandpa, that's a crazy idea. Cause that's not like a grandfatherly, like wacky idea for a grandpa to do. That's like just an absolute fucking lunatic's idea.
Hey, Joe.
I mean, as a huge superhero fan, like, at least he's picking the DCEU, which is already really shitty and fucked up. Because I'd be really, really pissed if he tried to have, like, Captain America under there. I would really be annoyed. So, yeah. So, you know, if it's, like, a Zack Snyder, like, Superman, like, Man of Steel shirt, okay, go for it. Because they've already fucked that up. It's just going to make it look worse.
Okay. Anybody else? Oh, Elizabeth, go ahead.
No, Emma had her hand up before.
Oh, Emma. Sorry. I'm a little lost.
So it is very funny, but I will say that when I first heard about anything about Trump removing any part of his clothing, my immediate response was like, ew, nah, I don't want to see that. I don't need to see that today or anything. So like, I kind of have to hand it to his advisors on this one. I don't think this was their reasoning, but I'm very glad I did not have to see a 74-year-old man rip open his shirt.
Oh,
or at least try to.
That would have been one of the best episodes ever. Elizabeth.
Do you think he's pro Snyder Cut, Joe? Like
he's definitely pro Snyder Cut. Oh my gosh.
He's like, I want to see Dark Superman and
Oh my God! Like if you really wanted to go full on, he should have just got a Homelander shirt. Everyone, watch The Boys on Amazon. It's really good.
Did you want to say something?
Oh yeah, no, I was going to say that. You know, I think we often just sit around the house and say, I think his advisors really hate him for some of the stuff that he does. But this clearly got to be at least one person in the room who said, are you out of your fucking mind? You cannot do that. Because it, I mean, it like you were saying before, it sounds like something Trump would have thought of. And if it had been anybody else, we would have thought, okay, now this was a made up story. Like maybe The Onion came up with this one. But no, this was definitely a Trump idea. You know, I'm surprised that he didn't even think of doing the Superman theme music and everything else, just kind of going with the whole motif of it. But you know, at least one person on that staff doesn't completely hate him yet. I guess it's the one person that didn't get COVID, since seemingly nobody else left.
You know what I wonder though? Like, I'm sure there's been other cases where the advisors have tried to stop him from doing something. So what made this different? You know, why did he actually listen to the advisors when it comes to this? That's what I want to know.
Oh, but do you think he really listened to the advisors? Or
yeah, copyright had a lot to do with it.
That's true. Mm. Joe?
Elizabeth was first.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think they'd let him play the Superman music. And tonight at the, he doesn't need the Superman shirt now because of like his rally tonight. He's been like, I'm invincible. Nothing can stop me. Get in here. I want to kiss and hug everybody in this room. He's off the rails.
Yeah.
Yeah. I caught a little bit of tonight's rally and he's definitely on something. He was talking so fast and just not right. Joe. And then I'll go to Emma.
But speaking of The Onion, just real quick, I've got to assume that The Onion is going to be voting for Biden Harris, only for the fact that they probably got their story written. They're about ready to go to press, and then it actually happens, and they're like, "Shit! Now we got to come up with something else." This really sucks.
Emma,
first of all, I agree. I don't remember who said it, but someone was saying that like it's difficult to write comedy about Trump when he is the punchline. Mm-hmm. So, like, how do you do the thing? We've done as much as we can, but Jesus.
You do them in Spanish, apparently.
I mean, yeah. So, way to go, Peter. Listen, there's definitely copyright stuff going on there, but also, like, they did turn his return to the White House into a very propaganda-y, like, short film, basically. Yeah. To the point where they, like, he went back outside and, like, reshot his, like, return home.
Yeah.
And then I saw like a little snippet of it, and it is, even without the Superman logo, it is still very super heroic, kind of. So like, listen, I think that's how they got him to not do it, because they were like, you'll be your own superhero.
Ugh. I'm so mad I didn't think of this when it happened. Why didn't anyone call it Triumph of the Ill? Because it's the Nazi propaganda film, Triumph of the Will. Damn.
Did call it.
Oh, okay, cool. No. Yeah. All right, then. Well, so somebody did it. I know I'm like 8 days late on this, but oh, okay. All right, cool.
Trump was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go up there. I'm gonna walk up there, and then I'm gonna pull this up." There's no ramps, right? There's no ramps.
Yeah.
Joe Biden, please put all the handicap ramps back into the White House when you get back in. They were obviously all been removed.
So the Lakers won the NBA championship last night, and within an hour, the area outside of the Staples Center was overflowing with people not socially distancing. After watching these players confine themselves to a bubble for 3 months in order to play these games safely, it seems like no one saw the irony in celebrating in such a reckless way. My question is, was this people just blowing off steam and having something worth celebrating for the first time in months, or are we getting to the point where people are going to be less and less willing to follow health guidelines due to frustration? Let's start with you, Joe.
Well, after 17 championships, we know that it's a Laker tradition to all get together at the Staples Center and then riot and then burn down, smash windows and burn
down
buses.
That's terrible. I saw some of those
police cars. I'd love to tell you how nice and civil all of us Clipper fans will be, but I'm not all the Clippers have never ever won a championship, so I don't know. But I'm telling you, if the Clippers win, we're going to be way chill about it.
Emma?
If the Knicks win, we will not be chill about it at all. Also, pigs will have flown. So, like, you know, it's not coming anytime soon. I mean,
that Clippers Knicks finals.
That'd be something, huh?
I mean, listen, at a certain point, they were at least outside. And the footage, I saw a fair number of the people were wearing masks. Not enough of them, but like, it's not like nobody was wearing them. I think that people are frustrated. I think that like we're at the 7 month mark now or something close to it. Oh man, it's mid October. Yes, we're at the 7 month mark. So yeah, people are frustrated. People want to get outside, and any excuse you can get to celebrate something outside is, you know, we need that mental release. But like, it's not so bad. At least they were outside doing it as opposed to inside the Staples Center and like running around without masks and rioting and stuff.
Pete?
I think I'm playing the old man tonight on the show because I watched that last night and my immediate thought was, we're never getting out of this whole COVID thing. It's just, this is just going to go on and on and on because, you know, California is right now one of the better states when it comes to the virus. And that's going to end now. I mean, we're going to go back to the same problem everybody else was having. And yeah, I get it. People wanted to have something to celebrate. But again, maybe it's just because there is some weird irony in the fact that all these millionaire basketball players who probably, you know, would have rather not been locked into a small community for 3.5 months. They did it. And they kind of like gave an example that, you know, me personally, I know that the ratings have been down for the NBA, but I gained so much more respect for the NBA watching the way they handled this than probably any of the other sports. I mean, I think baseball did pretty well with it and football is abysmal, but you know, they did a really good job with this. And then to see all these people in the streets essentially doing exactly what nobody is supposed to do, just let me believe this is just never going to end. I mean, we're going to be in lockdown until every person has gotten the vaccine. So, I mean, at least from my standpoint, if anybody thinks that you're going to be doing like normal life things until there's two twos at the end of the calendar, I just can't see it. I mean, how? Mm-hmm. So I'm an old man.
But you know, if you want to have some safe fun, go to the Morongo Casino because everything there has been clean.
You stop.
Clean right here. Morongo, give me a call.
You're not going to do this, Joe.
I think someone's trying to get a free room at the Morongo. Emma.
Listen. It's true that we're going to have a very difficult time getting out of COVID. And I tend to agree with you that we're probably not going to be doing a whole lot of normal life stuff until 2022. Like I'm with you on that. But the BLM protests over the summer, we didn't see a huge spike out of those. Those were better about wearing masks, but yeah. Like it's also one night versus months of sustained protests, which listen, I'm not exactly an epidemiologist, but I'd like to think they kind of evened out, especially because it was all outside. Like, I don't disagree with you, but I don't think this is the reason why.
I would generally agree, but considering that it was a small gathering at that Rose Garden where literally every Republican official caught COVID, I'm not so hopeful now.
They were also, like, all shaking hands and, like, hugging
each other. Yeah, we're getting up in each other's face.
Everybody was not wearing a mask.
Yeah. They're like, come here, you.
Yeah.
So on this date in 1901... President Theodore Roosevelt gave the People's House a new name by changing it from the Executive Mansion to the White House. Due to the expansion of the building, an addition of the West Wing, where all staff, was relocated. We thought that we could end tonight's show making suggestions for new names for the White House after 4 years of the Trump presidency. Does anyone have any ideas? Let's start with you, Pete.
Well, since I thought of the question, I was trying to come up with an answer. It took me a while. But if we want to call it after most properties that Trump's been involved in, I think the new name of the White House could be Liquidation Sale. So just a thought.
Okay. Elizabeth?
Yeah, you could go with the People's Foreclosure or considering Trump's tendencies, the White Power House.
Ah, that's
nice. Trump Tenement. Presidential porta potty for the child inside all of us who likes dirty jokes, and crap shack.
Okay, Emma, what about you?
Mine are generally fairly obvious. One was in the same vein as yours, so the White Hood house. I was also thinking the Orange house, because that's the same color he is. And my other thought was, because he always puts his name on all of his buildings, and they're all called the Trump Building, it would be the Trump Building. No, not that one. The one on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Okay. Joe, do you have any?
No, I kept coming back to the fact that they're going to have to change all of those bathroom fixtures back from gold to a normal color. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I couldn't think of any.
What about if they
I
just
was trying went... to come up with something that was like Mar-a-Lago, but.
What if they went with something simple, just like confefe? Like maybe that's maybe that can
Yosemite.
The Bigley House.
The Bigley House.
I like that one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bigley House. Big things happen in the Bigley House. Big.
Well, also the Bigley House because. That's where he's going after the presidency. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. That's the big house. That's different.
Okay. Well, I guess that's our show for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here again tomorrow at 6 p.m. Bye, everyone. Have a good night.